I understand it's a very human issue. And I understand, for example, that, you know, if somebody was in a situation and their husband walked out and left them, and maybe, and has often happened, and maybe left them to rear a few children, and really unjustifiably, and that happens, and they're left maybe either male or female, mother or father, to raise the children on their own, and the partner meets somebody else, and that other person, as a practicing Catholic, feels that they can go to communion, and the partner feels they can go to communion, you can see how painful that is for the person. I don't think it's easy, and particularly if it involves betrayal. You know, in a marriage situation, like that goes hugely deep. And I think there's a real challenge there. But then if you put the other side of it, say you're the person who has been left, you've been very good, you've been looking, rearing your children, and then you meet somebody. Now, you've done nothing wrong. You were abandoned, betrayed, whatever. You've done your very best with your kids. You meet somebody else, you fall in love, and you're not allowed to go to communion. I mean, that's hardly right either. So this is not an easy issue. What I think is very interesting in it all is what we mean by the indissolubility of marriage and when that begins. And see, the priest doesn't marry people, they marry each other. And I think for me, really, compassion and, you know, learning to be really ask for the grace of forgiveness no matter where we are, if we're the one who's been wronged and we don't want the other person to go to communion, or vice versa, that in some way we are called as Christians to forgive. And the Eucharist is the central table around which we gather, and we gather as broken people. I mean, I'm never perfect when I go to Mass. I never will be. Who of us is to point and say somebody is worthy or unworthy? That is a matter between, I think, the individual and God in their conscience. And I'm not saying that the community doesn't have any role to play in this. I mean, that people having to be called on things. But I think the community can call people on issues of justice and social justice. But I'd be much more that, you know, we'd be called on how we treat our neighbours and how we treat the poor among us and how we treat migrants. You know, we don't call people on that, this, going round to communion. And yet we want to call them on something that is terribly fraught and requires a huge amount of compassion.
Mm-hmm. You raise very good points there, in the sense that there is the sense of the innocent party who's been left behind, and if you like, the, I don't like to use the word guilty, but the person who made a decision to walk out on the relationship, who decided to dissolve the relationship or not work through the issues. And as you say, the Christian message or the Christian response is to forgive everybody, but we are inclined to say, oh well, actually, you know, the person who didn't want the divorce is the innocent one, so maybe they should be allowed to get communion. But the person who decided to break down the marriage, oh well, they deliberately broke it down, and therefore maybe they should be excluded.
Yeah, and again, we're into judging somebody. I mean, the Pope said on that plain interview when he was asked about homosexuality, who am I to judge? You know, that is really important. Like, we have this teaching about the sin and the sinner, but when we apply it is very interesting. And I can't know the guilt or otherwise of another person. And I think there's a wisdom in that. It's not to say I can't know what sin is and what wrong is, and that we know what betrayal is and we know what abandoning people and leaving and breaking vows are. But that's the issue. But then the actual person themselves, that's a different, very different matter. I am not standing in their stead before God. And I think this thing also about around the indissolubility of marriage. You see, I think that the church gets, the institutional church and its teaching get really hung up on these kind of sort of legalistic, catechetical things. I would say I made a vow in my own marriage, and my husband at the time did too, and I think he meant it, and so did I. And for me, even though I am divorced, I would still see myself as living out that sacramental grace. Because I need that for, you know, when my children growing up, that they would have a good relationship with their father, that I wouldn't be going around being bitter to him or to anybody else in the whole setup. I think that's a real grace, that if you can keep, really face the Christian challenge of being loving and forgiving. And that grace is part of, I think, the sacrament of marriage, that can live on and make that a real sacrament, even though you're not living with the person. So there's a sort of a lack of imagination in terms of real theological thinking around what does the indissolubility of this marital sacrament really mean. And that, I think, that's not an accident, because most of the people doing the thinking of that are celibate, usually male, and have never been married. And even if there are a lot of female theologians, but very few married theologians, female theologians. So the input on this, and if you look at the synod, like, where is the input coming from? It's a synod of bishops and a few lay people watching on and a few women. I mean, it's not good enough by any stretch at all for me. But the whole women's issue is another issue. I mean, it's a key issue for me, but not for this interview. But nonetheless, but it does touch on it in this, insofar as where does the sensus fidei, the people of God, where does our input come in? So you have these huge interpretations and rigors and rules coming about through various reasons, and you have them being instituted and almost made into something that cannot be tampered with, as if it was the cornerstone of the church, which it has never been. And it's done by people, they don't even ask the experience of, well, you're the married people, you're the divorced people, can we all listen to your voice in this? Can we really work this out together? And there's where the rubber hits the road, and you can just see it. We've no input. And the church and its teaching is the poorer for it.
And I mean, you talk about the indissolubility of marriage, and you make the very valid point that if you have children, you, in a sense, you're never really separated from that person. And yet, I suppose the church is still trying to hang on to an ideal, and that maybe if they bring in a certain amount of dissolubility or allow people to divorce or have an annulment, that they're afraid that the standard of marriage is going to slip, that it's like a slippery slope, that you're then into the more secular idea of, well, marriage is just for as long as you can put up with each other and then you move on.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think there is something about trying to hold, absolutely, if you get married as a sacrament as opposed to getting married in a secular setting, that you are aspiring to and holding on to something of exactly that sacred nature of a union blessed by God and, you know, a special presence of one to the other, and then the children that are involved. And that's part of it as well. You know,
I suppose what I'm saying is, how do you manage to maintain that while at the same time being pastorally sensitive to people who, for whatever reason, haven't been able to maintain that?
I mean, it is a very thorny issue. Being human is a messy business. It's, you know, it's never been simple. It's never been easy. There's always complications. And for me, in those situations, I think the challenge of being a Christian and a human being, if you're a Christian, is that you have to look for the deepest love and true forgiveness and work out a way. I mean, I mentioned earlier about, you know, my marriage, trying to live it out in another way now, by my relationship with my ex-husband. He has two beautiful children in another relationship. They are two totally innocent children. My two children were totally innocent, and they have very good relationships. And I think it's really important for all of us adults involved that, you know, the challenge is that we make sure that their goodness and the way they care for each other and like each other, that we don't make it any more difficult, despite our own pain or loss or jealousies or whatever. That's a real challenge. I mean, that is very demanding for anybody in those kind of situations. That is a real call of being a Christian. It's to have to dig deep and ask for a grace, and forgiveness is a grace. I mean, when Jesus, you know, was it Peter said to him, many times do I have to forgive? You know, it's, you know, seven times, like, that's a lot. Sort of, well, I do the seven. And, you know, Jesus goes, oh, no, 70 times seven. I mean, you just have to keep forgiving. It is a non-negotiable. that's really hard. You know, nobody ever said Christianity was easy. And the founder of Jesus himself ended up on a cross. And I think that if you're really serious about being a Christian, you end up with a lot of little crucifixions, and some people get very big ones, and betrayals, like, you know, Judas and Peter, and you end up in the agony in the garden and saying, please don't let this be happening to me, you know. I mean, a marriage falling apart is an awful thing for anybody. Nobody would court it. And it can wreak havoc. And to try and, you need every grace you can to pull on that and to try and hold a place where people are helped to heal, and where you can do the best for the kids, and where the wounds start to heal over time, and where the very best it can be wrought out of just not a great situation. And situations happen that is held together. And obviously I think anybody with a brain in their head would say, and in those situations, isn't it blessed are those who've had a 40, 50, 60 year marriage, you know, who've been faithful to one another, who've got, you know, or if it was infidelity, who forgave and came together again and got over it and went and did their best and tried to make a real go of it. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And sometimes, I'm sorry, but it is unfortunate that people have to break apart. And there are reasons for that. And life happens. And as I said, it isn't. Life is never simple. So in that regard, you're trying to be, at the one hand, compassionate, and at the other, that balancing act of holding something has been really worthwhile. But I think that can be done. I don't think it's impossible, but I don't think it can be done within the current framework of, I think there's old wine needs to go into new wineskins, and by that, the people who it directly affects, the people of God, the married, divorced, you know, the children, they need to be part of the solution. They need to be the people of God. And unfortunately, the way our church is structured at the moment, that the laity have little or no input, and so seen on it.
What would you say if you could be there?
The things I've just been saying. I would be saying this. I'd say, would you like to read?
Well, what would be the sort of practical outcome of that?
Well, the practical outcome for me personally is that I would never want to stop any person who wanted to be part, go into communion because they were in a second relationship. I would be talking about giving the nourishment and the challenge and the strength and the support to those who are maybe feeling hurt and wounded, or, you know, feel that this is not fair, or who feel it's undermined their marriage. I'd be talking about addressing all the issues I've raised here today. But you have to first, and listening to the people who are experiencing this, and letting them be challenged and really exploring together, well, what am I saying when I go to Eucharist? And what does Eucharist really mean? And what am I saying in my community? What am I saying about forgiveness? What am I saying about loving your enemies? What am I doing in being a Christian? Because this is where it's not about rules. It's about the heart. It's about the soul. It's about getting to the core of living a Christian life, I think. And what are we saying about really making the body of Christ incarnate? And if we're really doing that, would we be turning to somebody and saying, no, you're not welcome? What am I doing when I and my community say that? What is that saying about the Eucharist we're celebrating? You know, Jesus said the tax collectors and the prostitutes are getting into heaven ahead of you.